people's face. The K is for the kill, M is for the lover, and the M is for the mutiny, and I wish it didn't happen.
Pirate radio, arr, gar, gar. Pirate radio, where's my drum?
Now the N is for knots, or no, my bones are sinking. The B is for the peg leg that keeps me standing up. A Q is for quantum leap, R is for the rum, and the S is for the scurvy, which I wish it didn't get.
Pirate radio, arr, gar, gar.
That's underneath my boat. And B is for Bukitas, who plays a sour note. W is tie is this, X marks a spot. Why? Cause I'm a pirate.
Pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, where's my grog?
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Welcome to Palestine Today, service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Wednesday, September 5, 2012. The Israeli military kidnapped 7 Palestinians in the West Bank, and the Palestinian president is scheduled to meet with Egyptian president Wednesday. These stories and more are coming up. Stay tuned. Israeli soldiers invaded on Wednesday at dawn several Palestinian communities in the occupied West Bank, broke into and searched dozens of homes and kidnapped 7 residents. Ahrar Center for Detainees Studies reported that the army invaded Awarta village near the northern West Bank city of Nablus and kidnapped one resident, identified as George Awad, 21, a student at Al-Najah University in Nablus. Awad is the brother of Hakim, who is imprisoned by Israel, serving 5 life terms. Also in Nablus, soldiers invaded the residential building and kidnapped 4 Palestinians. In Jenin district, also in the northern part of the West Bank, soldiers kidnapped 2 residents from Kfar Ra'i and Aqaba villages. The 2 were identified as Bassam Sbeh from Kfar Ra'i and Ja'far Ghannam from Aqaba. Soldiers also invaded home of former political prisoner Mustafa Abu Arra and searched his home and damaged some of his property. It's worth mentioning that the army kidnapped on Tuesday at night a young Palestinian woman and her 12-year-old brother in Tel Rumeida neighborhood in the southern West Bank city of Hebron. The army also invaded Kfar Kaddoum village in the northern part of the West Bank and kidnapped several local nonviolent peace activists. In political news, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas will be arriving in Cairo on Wednesday evening for a 2-day visit that will include a meeting with the newly elected Egyptian President Mohamed Morsi and Arab foreign ministers. The talks will focus on the latest developments in the occupied Palestinian territories and the ongoing investigation into the potential assassination of the late President Yasser Arafat. Palestinian ambassador in Cairo and permanent representative at the Arab League, Dr. Barakat Al-Farra, told Palestine Press that Abbas will meet with Morsi on Thursday and that the talks will discuss the situation in the Arab world and bilateral relations between Palestine and Egypt. Al-Farah noted that the significance of Abbas's meeting with Morsi and the Arab foreign ministers in Cairo, as it comes just before the scheduled sessions for the United Nations General Assembly, President Abbas will be addressing the Assembly demanding international recognition of the legitimate Palestinian rights to independence and sovereignty by establishing an independent state in the 1967 territory with East Jerusalem as its capital. In a special interview with Israel's leading newspaper, Haaretz, Norwegian Foreign Minister Jonas Gahr Støre stated that the international community should reconsider the import of goods produced in Israeli settlements in the occupied Palestinian territories. He said that Israel's settlements are illegal under international law and that his country is weighing different options to implement policies that oppose the construction and expansion of settlements. The Norwegian official made his statement just before his planned visit to Ramallah and Tel Aviv as part of the preparations for the Conference of Donor Countries that will be held in New York next month. That's all from Palestine today. This was the Wednesday, September 5th roundup of news from the occupied Palestinian territories. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. Today's report has been brought to you by Hussein Qassis and me, George Rishmal.
Afghanistan, 3rd of September. Yet another Afghan soldier opened fire on and killed two NATO soldiers of unreported nationality, even as hundreds of Afghan soldiers and police were detained for an ongoing investigation of possible insurgent ties. Afghanistan, 4th of September. Two mercenaries were killed in a roadside bomb attack in Andar district of Ghazni province. Their vehicle hit a mine or a roadside bomb while escorting a NATO convoy. Afghanistan, ongoing. Afghan forces will soon take control of the notorious prison at Bagram Air Base from departing U.S. forces. Bagram has been called Guantanamo East for human rights abuses of detainees there. Afghanistan, 4th of September. A suicide bomber at a funeral near the Pakistani border killed 20 to 25 people. The bomber was trying to kill an Afghan government official. Mr. Barack Obama, we cannot win this war. Now is the time to pull the plug, bring all the troops home today.
Strength in their hearts and fear in their eyes. Old soldiers never die, they only fade away. But the young ones do not die, nor they are cut down instead. And someone pulled the trigger, gave the order, held the song. And someone wrote the advert in the paper that they read. I will be done. But you won't get your hands on my son. You can wait till kingdom come.
As WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange remains a virtual prisoner inside Ecuador's embassy in London after winning political asylum status, his group's disclosure of tens of thousands of secret U.S. State Department cables reverberates across Latin America. Leaked cables published in 2011 revealed the heavy hand of the Obama administration in the violent campaign against drug traffickers and American unhappiness with Brazil's attempts to broker a diplomatic solution to the West's confrontation with Iran over its nuclear program. Cablegate, as the leaked communications were known, led to the resignation of the U.S. ambassador to Mexico, Carlos Pascual, after a cable revealed a biting critique of Mexican generals for risk avoidance. According to The Nation magazine, the disclosure embarrassed the Mexican generals and caused a rift in U.S.-Mexican relations. The WikiLeaks cables also exposed attempts by the George W. Bush White House to enlist other nations in the region to spy on Venezuela's President Hugo Chavez. Many observers say the secret cables are only the tip of the iceberg of U.S. intervention in Latin America. In Brazil, perhaps the most important and lasting effects of the WikiLeaks disclosures may be the establishment of new independent media outlets willing to expose official secrets. A new nonprofit center for investigative journalism based on the U.S. group ProPublica was formed to promote the sharing of groundbreaking investigative stories. Now, Brazil's big TV networks like Globo are eager to sponsor the annual gathering of the Brazilian Association of Investigative Journalism.
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to wsqtradio@hushmail.com. Repeat, wsqtradio@hushmail.com. On the 3rd of September, unions held a large parade in Charlotte, North Carolina, to support President Obama just before the Democratic National Convention. A smaller march of anarchists and Occupy Charlotte activists entered the parade. In effect, they asked what Obama was smoking if he thought he could send more troops to Afghanistan and keep Guantanamo Bay open, yet expect opponents of war and arbitrary arrest to vote for him in November. One participant from D.C., from the Anarchist Alliance D.C. Network, spoke on the phone about the events of the day.
Today we participated in the parade for the unions and the workers. The unions here in Charlotte are supporting Obama, and we basically infiltrate ourselves, a few from Occupy Wall Street and a few from Anarchist Alliance and a few from Occupy Charlotte, made a small little march in the middle of the parade against Obama.
Ooh.
Yeah, and we were about 15 people, and not arrested, nobody got arrested.
What was the reaction to that?
The reaction at the beginning was a lot of confusion. They didn't know really what to do. They just keep looking at us like, should we do something? And then eventually they actually came to the park, Marshall Park, and this is where they ended the parade. Then we had no confrontation, but like face-to-face debate between the supporters of Obama and the coalition here at Occupy Charlotte. And that went pretty well, too, because we got a lot of media. And I did a mic check, which was the only mic check without a microphone, because everybody was using this little microphone that was going around. And I decided not to use it. And yeah, basically my mic check was the radical mic check. We have a few informants that were like, well, you might want to think about voting for Obama or not voting for Obama. And I was like, no.
What issues were raised against Obama? Did people bring up Guantanamo Bay or the continuing war in Afghanistan?
Yes. When the supporters start asking about Obama, is a great candidate for these elections, and we were like, yeah, what about Guantanamo? What about bringing the troops back? Also, the healthcare was another complaint.
Well, I assume the healthcare complaint was about the compulsory private purchase scheme, the one that was modeled on a Heritage Foundation proposal from years ago, and is basically the fruition of insurance company dreams from 40 years ago. Was that basically what the issue was with the healthcare?
Yeah, basically that was the things that were, the people that were complaining about, you know, what Obama didn't do. We'll say something similar like that.
And that would be single payer.
That's a participant from the Anarchist Alliance DC network, and she also had a very ugly piece of news
It turns out that some folks from Occupy Oakland, who were going to Charlotte for the Democratic National Convention protests, were arrested and held overnight by police somewhere in Texas.
So another news. Our friends from Oakland just got arrested last night somewhere in Texas, but they were released today in the morning, so they should be on their way.
The Occupy Oakland people were arrested in Texas on their way to the Democratic National Convention.
Yes.
That is ugly.
That is ugly, and that happened yesterday.
Fortunately, they were released. As this is being recorded on the 3rd of September, they're on their way to the protests against the DNC in Charlotte, North Carolina. And as of the 3rd of September, the Occupy camp in Marshall Park was up to 37 tents, and surely more tents will be set up as more people arrive for the protests. On the 4th of September, in Charlotte, where the Democratic National Convention is being held, veterans staged a Free Bradley Manning march on the convention. After all, it has been on Obama's watch that Bradley Manning has been held for well over a year without trial, for allegedly passing documents to WikiLeaks. This march was reported on Twitter to succeed in blocking busloads of delegates going to the Democratic National Convention. Marchers from the Occupy Charlotte and anarchist contingents were unable to reach the Bradley Manning march as police surrounded their feeder march and refused to let them go anywhere except into the so-called free speech zone. These zones have been around since the 1988 Democratic National Convention in Atlanta, where their mayor tried and failed to prevent all protests in the streets. At the 2004 Democratic National Convention in Boston, the main use of the free speech zone was for a Guantanamo Bay protest, since the razor wire fences made it look like Camp X-Ray. In Charlotte, the so-called free speech zone or protest pen is a fenced-off area like a jail. Police seem to have picked a stupid area to try to block marchers simply trying to reach another march. Here's live sound from the feeder march at about 1:30 p.m. September the 4th.
So we'd be doing exactly what we're doing right now, except now we're blocking a ton of traffic. We got, I don't know how many people here. There's so many cops around here, so I think, I don't even know who we got here. I think we've got three or maybe five, each of you. So I don't know who ordered you guys to stop here. I don't know why they ordered it. I can come up with two reasons. One, they're goddamn morons. They are absolutely the dumbest person in the world. Because, honestly, this is not protecting anyone. This is not keeping anyone safe. This is just annoying people and having you guys stand out here. You don't want to stand out here. You guys are, I know you're sweating those earphones, but I'm sweating right here.
Here is an interview with someone from the Anarchist Alliance DC network from inside the surrounded march trying to reach the Bradley Manning march.
We didn't even get to the march. We just got surrounded in each stone wall street, and they're not letting us move anywhere. We're completely surrounded. The only way, the only place that they're letting us go is this stupid cage that they have built for us that they call the free speech zone. And it's surrounded by red fences, and they think that we're gonna go in there. This is Occupy Charlotte, DC, Wall Street, Anarchist Alliance, and yeah, basically we didn't get to the march. We just didn't get there. The march is somewhere else.
The police were so afraid of having the Bradley Manning march and the Occupy and Anarchist contingents join together that at the same time that they were blocking the Occupy and Anarchist march from proceeding any further at the price of a massive blockade of traffic, they also blocked the Bradley Manning march from reaching the same free speech zone, the same protest jail that the anarchists and Occupy activists didn't want to enter. The price of this was that the Bradley Manning march, instead of going to the free speech zone, found themselves also out in the street blocking busloads of delegates from going to the Democratic National Convention. Brilliant move, Charlotte police. Both of the midday marches against the Democratic National Convention on the 4th of September were trapped in the streets by Charlotte police. The Occupy Charlotte, Occupy Wall Street, Occupy DC, Anarchist Alliance DC Network march was blocked by police in the street near the so-called free speech zone, which was surrounded by fences and looked like a jail. The protesters wouldn't enter it. The Bradley Manning march organized by veterans was blocked in the streets from getting anywhere near that same so-called free speech zone, as police feared the marchers were joined. While rain fell and protesters were trapped in the streets by police, people had a lot of things to say that were recorded on various YouTube videos.
Just like Bradley Manning, I have a family member who is like a father to me. This is not a country. This is a war zone.
Half of the graduating class this year is going to be underemployed or unemployed. There's more houses than homeless people.
We're poor, we're wet, and we don't give a f***. We're poor, we're wet, and we don't give a f***.
Later that night, some of the protesters headed back out for a black block, a protest where everybody is dressed in black with faces concealed for anonymity. The cops were only able to kettle up what they could see in advance. When caught by surprise, they were much less effective. Here's what one of the anarchists had to say about the black flock.
We actually got near Bank of America, pretty much downtown. We pushed against the cops. A few other people pushed against the cops using a big flag, like a big banner to cover themselves. It was pretty good.
Not surprising. I really doubt that the Charlotte Police Department was prepared for an organized group of protesters moving as an organized, disciplined unit protected by reinforced banners used as shields. A lot of protesters against the Democratic National Convention find it rather interesting that President Barack Obama plans to accept his party's renomination for candidate for president at a place called Bank of America Stadium in downtown Charlotte. That's right. Mr. Barack Obama will accept the Democratic Party's nomination and presumably Bank of America's nomination as well at Bank of America Stadium. Does that mean Mr. Barack Obama is Bank of America's man in the White House? Here's what a protester from the Anarchist Alliance DC network, temporarily based at Occupy Charlotte, had to say about the Bank of America connection.
What do you think of Barack Obama taking the nomination at a place sponsored by Bank of America?
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, Bank of America sponsors the DNC. I think that is corrupt. I think that money should be taken out of politics. It's not a surprise that Bank of America is one of the sponsors of the DNC. They both just working to perpetuate the system that we're living in and promote all the inequality that we are fighting against.
Protesters against the Democratic National Convention are planning a march against a two-party system at 7:30 p.m. on the 5th of September.
What were the details on the march today?
The details of the march is going to start at 7 p.m. at Marshall's Park. We don't want to say the location that we're trying to get.
Yes, of course.
We're going to be Marshall's Park.
Just say there will be an interesting march that starts at Marshall Park at 7 p.m.
Yeah, it starts at Marshall's Park at 7 p.m.
Yeah, is this something that's been publicized or which is being held close?
No, it's publicized. Yes, anti-two-party system today at Marshall's Park at 7 p.m. This is what we're going to start.
And hey, Democrats, don't think it's going to stop either. What on earth are the Democrats smoking to think they can first try to turn the Occupy movement into their version of the Tea Party, which didn't work, of course, then turn around and nominate Barack Obama for a second term at a place named for Bank of America?
Get real. You can't work both sides of the street. To occupy Wall Street, occupy D.C., occupy Oakland, occupy Charlotte, occupy Tampa, and all the other Occupy movements around the country, Bank of America is the very symbol of everything that's wrong with the United States political system. And yet the Democrats, hoping to get votes from Occupy activists, hold their convention in Charlotte, North Carolina, where Bank of America is headquartered, and schedule President Barack Obama to be nominated at Bank of America Stadium. Update, update, update. It was just announced at about 4 p.m. on the 5th of September that President Obama has canceled his plans to make his acceptance speech at the Bank of America Stadium and instead will give his acceptance speech in a Time Warner Cable arena where the rest of the Democratic National Convention has been held. They say this is because of the threat of rain, but I wonder, are they worried about being rained on with water or rained on with Occupy protesters who don't like the fact that Bank of America is the very symbol of everything that is wrong with American politics? And for President Obama to take his acceptance of the nomination at a stadium named for Bank of America is effectively to take Bank of America's nomination for president. Is that the real reason that this plan was canceled and the nomination's acceptance speech has been moved to Time Warner Cable Arena? Tuesday, the 4th of September, 10 undocumented immigrants from the UndocuBus in Charlotte, North Carolina, protesting the Democratic National Convention, got off the bus and staged a civil disobedience protest, sitting down blocking the streets, and were arrested. The Obama administration has deported more immigrants than even George W. Bush, yet Obama is hoping for Latino votes. That's why undocumented immigrants are protesting against the Democratic National Convention. Here's what some of the folks on the UndocuBus had to say about the Democratic National Convention and the protest.
No fears! Immigrants are walking here, no papers, no fears! Immigrants are walking here!
My name is Tanya Sueta. I'm with the No Papers, No Fear, Right for Justice. And we're marching because we're here marching against fear, against politicians telling people that they shouldn't be out in the streets, fighting for their rights. I'm undocumented myself, and I'm here with a bus full of about 40 undocumented people coming from around the country. We've been traveling through the South, talking to other communities, telling them that it's okay to stand up for their rights, to tell their stories, and to fight against anti-immigration laws. We think that President Obama should listen to the immigrant communities. We need him to take courageous steps, just like the people on this bus have. We need to stop deportations. He's been the president who's deported the most people in history, and we're here to ask him what side of history he's going to be on.
Mi nombre es María Cruz Ramírez, y estoy aquí en esta marcha principalmente.
My name is María Cruz Ramírez, and I'm here in this march first of all because I want the dignity and respect of my children. My children have suffered a lot. They've had to protest against these laws. They've been arrested, two of them, one minor and one adult.
Mayor de edad, y nada, tengo que apoyarlos.
I have to support them. I have to continue their struggle. They began this struggle, and I, as a mother, I tell all the mothers, unite with your children, because the dreams of your children are my dreams too. It's been my best gift to struggle and to say to the people that we can do it, without papers and without fear. Here I am.
A new glut of natural gas driven by the controversial extraction method known as hydraulic fracturing, or fracking, has shaken up U.S. energy policy and increased pressure to phase out older, dirty coal-burning power plants, which produce more toxic emissions than newer ones. Over the summer, a report by the U.S. Energy Information Administration found natural gas tied with coal for the first time as the leading fuels used by U.S. power plants. With stricter air quality standards for new power plants from the Environmental Protection Agency, coal now faces new economic hurdles. The report estimates about 17% of all coal-fired power plants could be retired by the year 2020. Optimists also note carbon emissions from the U.S. energy sector have fallen to the lowest level in 20 years. Today, a new natural gas plant produces 30 to 50% less carbon emissions than a conventional coal power plant. Energy analysts see natural gas as an improvement, but not a real solution to address the urgent issue of climate change. Natural gas produces methane, a major greenhouse gas. However, even with the increased use of natural gas in the United States, predictions of rising global temperatures of 3.5 degrees Celsius by the year 2050 remain unchanged due to the increased burning of coal in China and India. In the longer term, clean energy advocates worry that cheap natural gas could reduce investment in a new generation of wind and solar energy production technologies.
Fracking is a form of natural gas drilling, an alternative to oil, because the oil kept spilling, bringing jobs to small towns, so everybody's willing. People turn on the lights and the drillers make a killing.
Water goes into the pipe into the ground. The pressure cranks fissures 7,000 feet down. The cracks release the gas that powers your town. That will is frack, yeah, totally frack.
But there's more in the water than just H2O. Toxic chemicals help to make the fluid flow. With names like benzene and formaldehyde, you better keep them far away from the water supply.
The drillers say the fissures are a mile below the groundwater pumped into American homes, but don't tell it to the residents of Sublet-Wayo, that water's frack. We're talking benzene.
What the frack is going on with all this fracking going on? I think we need some facts to come to light. I know we want our energy, but nothing ever comes for free. I think my water's on fire tonight.
So goes back to 2005. Bush said gas drillers didn't have to comply with the Safe Drinking Water Act before too long. It was frack, baby, frack until the break of dawn.
With the EPA out, it was up to the states, but they didn't have the money to investigate. Sick people couldn't prove fracking was to blame, all the while water wells were going up in flames.
Cause it's hard to contain all the methane released. It can get into the air, it can get into the streams. It's a greenhouse gas worse than CO2. Fracking done wrong could lead to climate change too.
Now it's not that drillers should never be fracking, but the current regulation is severely lacking. Reduce the toxins contained in the gas and wastewater, and the people will get sick, and the planet will get hotter.
What the frack is going on with all this fracking going on? I think we need some facts to come to light. I know we want our energy, but nothing ever comes for free. I think our water's on fire tonight.
Residents of communities near mountaintop removal coal mining operations in southern Appalachia suffer higher levels of many kinds of health problems than those living further away from such sites. Mountaintop removal is a mining method where millions of tons of dynamite are used to blast the tops off mountains in order to extract the coal seams beneath, dislodging rocks and earth which are dumped into the valleys below. Thus far, these operations have destroyed 500 mountain ridges and buried 2,000 miles of freshwater streams. While local residents can't prove their ailments are the result of mountaintop mining operations, many believe there is a direct connection. A score of scientific studies seems to back them up, and residents are now coming together to support legislation in Congress that would halt new permits for the mining practice until thorough health studies are conducted. Between the Lines' Melinda Tuhus spoke with Dr. Michael Hendricks, professor of health policy management and leadership at West Virginia University, who was the lead author on recent mountaintop mining health studies. He explains what he and his co-authors' research revealed and what conclusion he's come to about whether mountaintop mining should be allowed to continue.
We've done this research over the last 6 years or so, and it documents that people who live in mining environments in Appalachia experience health problems at higher rates than people in non-mining environments. And these health problems cross many different diagnostic groups. So we see that people in mining environments are more likely to have some forms of cancer, types of cardiovascular disease, lung disease, birth defects, lower birth weight babies, poor health-related quality of life. We found these effects are present for different outcomes for men, women, and children. So it's not just a problem among men who are coal miners. It's a larger problem for the community in general. We find that the health problems get more severe as the levels of mining increase. So the problems are worse where the mining levels are heaviest, and they're intermediate where mining is intermediate, and they're best where mining is absent. We find that the problems persist after controlling for the effects of other risk factors. So it's not because of smoking or poverty or age or education or obesity or other types of risks that also are related to these health problems. It's an independent effect. And more recently, we found that these problems are most pronounced and most concentrated specifically in areas of central Appalachia where mountaintop removal mining takes place. We don't yet have the direct evidence that links environmental conditions in a mining area to the specific health problems experienced by individuals. So we don't know yet that a particular disease outcome is related to environmental exposures. We know only that the people that live in these communities are at higher risk after controlling for other risks. So one of the things that we're doing right now to try to carry that forward is that we are starting to collect that direct environmental data in residential communities, in mountaintop mining environments where people live. We're taking water samples and air samples right in people's yards, right in their homes. And we are finding evidence that dust levels are significantly higher in the mining communities compared to the control communities. Estimates of the amount of dust that's deposited into the human lung are higher in the mining communities. We're seeing that the contents of the dust that are collected from the mining environments are primarily things like silica, aluminum, sulfur, organic carbon, things that you would expect in retrospect to find is related to mountaintop removal. So we're seeing evidence that what's in the air is, in fact, the coal itself and the overburden from the mountaintop removal mining, from the dust that's raised by the explosives, by the heavy machinery that removes hundreds of feet of soil and rock to get to the coal. That's what's in the air. So we know that the environmental conditions are impaired. We know that the health problems exist, but we haven't yet studied air and water quality for the same people and the same households that we're measuring the health outcomes for. That's the missing piece. That's harder to do. It's more expensive. It's time-consuming. But that's where we're trying to go next.
Is that the thing that could prove the connection to mountaintop removal mining?
That's the piece that could provide that evidence, yeah. The evidence that we have so far is, even though it's still indirect, it's so substantial that to try to argue that, oh, we just have to study it more, we don't really know, we don't have good evidence. Personally, I think we've crossed that line. I think we have enough indirect evidence that we know that mountaintop removal is damaging to the environment. That is a fact. And we know that people who live in these environments have health problems in ways that are not explained by other risk factors. That is a fact. For us to argue that all we have to do is continue to study, I think, is an excuse to do nothing, and that we should take responsible steps now to eliminate those environmental consequences from mountaintop removal mining.
And Mike Hendricks, how would that happen? Do you have specific ideas in mind? Do you mean just stop it?
Mountaintop removal mining should be stopped. The evidence for it is overwhelming. The evidence for it, and just in terms of its environmental impacts, put human health impacts aside if you don't believe the evidence for that is convincing enough yet. The evidence is compelling that water pollution alone that's coming off of the mining sites is in violation of existing law.
That was Dr. Michael Hendricks, a professor of health policy management and leadership at West Virginia University. Learn more about the health effects of mountaintop removal coal mining by visiting our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.